From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Shay Zeller, and this is The Front Porch. Living in Red Sox Nation means having a healthy obsession with baseball. We can't help it, especially at this time of year. As the weather changes and the days start getting longer, you can just smell it in the air. You can feel it in your bones. Baseball season has begun. Yesterday, we talked with the general manager of the New Hampshire Minor League Fisher Cats. Tonight, we turn our attention to the Red Sox. A little later in the show, we're going to get a ground-level view of spring training from a guy who's been through several of them. But first, part of being a Red Sox fan is getting caught up in the grand story of the team, its history of ups and downs, heartbreak and redemption, and the creative way the team has managed to dance between those two extremes. A new book focuses on some of the happiest memories for Red Sox fans. It's called The 50 Greatest Red Sox Games, and one of the authors joins me tonight to talk about some of those games. When she's not writing about her other passion, erotic fantasy, Celia Tan writes about the Yankees for Gotham Baseball Magazine. She was born and raised a Yankees fan, but she says she's come to love the Red Sox all the same. Celia lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and she joins us by phone now. Celia, welcome to The Front Porch.
Thanks for having me.
So, of course, I have to ask you right off the bat, so to speak, which of the Red Sox games do you list as their greatest game of all time?
Well, I decided that the greatest game in Red Sox history had to be actually two games. I sort of cheated and I put together October 17th and 18th, 2004, which is game four and five of the American League Championship Series, because I feel that's when the curse of the Bambino was reversed.
Where were these games?
These were at Fenway Park, and these were the memorable games where if the Yankees had won three in a row, if they won one more, the Red Sox would once again be eliminated at the hands of the oppressors from New York, and a miracle occurred, essentially.
What was that miracle?
They beat Mariano Rivera 2 days in a row, and they went on to not only then beat the Yankees four games in a row, which had never been done in baseball history. I mean, no team had ever come back from three games down to win a postseason series. And then, of course, they just swept right through the Cardinals, which just proved it was fate.
And Rivera is one of those really consistent, hard-to-beat kind of closing pitchers.
Yes.
And do I remember correctly? I think I may have actually been at these games. Are these the ones that went into many extra innings lasted?
Yes.
To the night?
In fact, we could have said that these both happened on the same day, since the one game ran so long, it ran over midnight into the next day, and then, of course, the next day started the next game. So it was sort of like, that's why I consider, you know, October 18th to be the day that the curse was broken.
And if I remember correctly, Ortiz is the man that you can say really broke that curse.
You know, he was a big part of it, but, you know, like little Dave Roberts was a big part of it, too. So it was like all these little things had to come together all at the same time in order for it to, you know, any little thing went wrong and they would have been eliminated. So
I was surprised that you didn't call the World Series victory itself one of the greatest games.
It's on the list of the top 50, but it's, you know, ultimately that game wasn't really that exciting. I mean, you know, it was a coronation, but it wasn't the election, as it were. You know.
Now, you were born and raised a Yankees fan.
That's right.
So tell us, why should Red Sox fans take your suggestions seriously about those top 50 games?
Well, I didn't actually just come up with the 50 on my own. First, I co-wrote the book with a good friend of mine named Bill Nowlin, who's written some books on Ted Williams and many other books on the Red Sox. And we started making our initial list by polling Red Sox fans on the internet and whatnot, saying, you know, well, if you could make your list of 50 games, you know, which would be on it? And we probably had about 500 games really to choose from, and then we started sort of narrowing it down. And to make it an interesting book, we tried to make sure that we covered some games from every part of Red Sox history, even when the team wasn't very good. And Bill especially was very adamant that we had to make sure that we had all the heartbreaking losses in there as well, because they're such an important part of Red Sox history. And if they weren't there, we gave them a short shrift, people would have felt cheated. You know, like if you cut out, I don't know, the car chase or the battle scene from a, you know, an epic movie. You
know? So you included some losses among these greatest games.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, number four is the Bucky Dent game, which still goes down, I mean, in most people's reckoning, as one of the greatest baseball games in history, much less one of the greatest Red Sox games. I mean, you know, so, but it is trumped by three wins, including Carlton Fisk's Bobby English home run in 1975 and Dave Henderson's home run in Anaheim in 1986. So.
And where does that tragic game, the October 25th, 1986 World Series game, come in? Where every Red Sox fan will remember that that ball went between Bill Buckner's legs.
It's at number six.
Number six.
Yeah.
Now, you ranked the games and gave them each a score. Mm-hmm. What decided how exciting a game actually was?
Well, we did. That was a little on, you know, the subjective side. What Bill and I did was we actually did a numerical score for every game based on several different categories, including, you know, how exciting the game appeared to be to the people in the stands, how historically significant it came out, you know, now looking back on them with hindsight. Were any records set or broken? Were there any interesting characters or backstory to the players who were important in the game? And, you know, things like that. And when you added those things all up, we ended up with a score, and as well as how often the game was nominated by fans and things like that. So, and of course, any game against the Yankees got extra points. So,
this is The Front Porch on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Shay Zeller. We'll talk more about those best moments in Red Sox history with Celia Tan in just a moment. In the meantime, I'd like to remind you that this is the NHPR Spring Membership Drive, and I hope you'll take a moment right now to support programs like The Front Porch. Thanks very much for your pledge. This is The Front Porch on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Shay Zeller, and tonight we're talking about baseball. Later in the show, we'll get a ground-level view of spring training camp from a guy who's been through several of them. But joining us now on the line is Celia Tan. Her new book is called The 50 Greatest Red Sox Games. Cecilia, if you could go back in time and attend any of these older games that you wrote about, which one would it be?
You know, I think the game I really wish I had been at was Ernie Shore's perfect game, which wasn't a perfect game. This was a game where Babe Ruth was supposed to pitch the game in 1917, and he got ejected after walking the first batter for arguing with the umpire over balls and strikes. And so Shore has to come out of the bullpen, and he pitches completely perfectly after that. I believe the runner who had walked ends up getting caught stealing, so he's erased, and then he set down 26 men in a row without allowing another man to reach base, which is just, you can't make that kind of thing up. You know, if I had written that as a fictional thing, people would be like, no, that could never happen, but it did. So.
Now, sometimes when you're doing research, you can come across fascinating characters like this, people you feel like you really come to life on the mm-hmm. page, that you get to, you feel like you get to know them. Mm. Were there any players that you have a new appreciation for because of your research?
I really appreciate Ted Williams a lot more. And the more I read about him, the more I wish I had a chance to know him when he was alive.
Why?
You know, he was, I think, one of the great misunderstood characters in baseball, and not that I think that I would have necessarily understood him either.
In what way was he misunderstood?
But, you know, just his constant sort of feuds with the media and the impressions people had of him at the time, you know, veered wildly between, you know, him being this sort of heroic figure and him being this sort of selfish, only cared about hitting, didn't care about fielding, you know, this and that. It's very hard to cut through, actually, all of the biases that the various media, members put on him to have any kind of an idea what he was actually like as a person. So, you know, but hey, he was the greatest hitter who ever lived.
Speaking of Red Sox players that make the fans run hot and cold, the Red Sox have been talking to Roger Clemens lately.
I know.
How do you feel about that?
Clemens is probably, if we can still call him a current player, probably one of my favorite current players. And just from a standpoint of a fan in the stands, I mean, every time he pitched, you knew you were watching, living Hall of Famer in front of you. I mean, you know, and just the whole, how he was run out of town here and, you know, the twilight of his career stuff with Dan Duquette, and then he goes on and won, you know, what is it, 4 more Cy Young Awards since then? Mm-hmm. And, the guy just never stops. I mean, when I've seen his quote-unquote last game so many times now. You know, I saw his last game at Fenway Park, his last game as a Yankee, his last game, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then he keeps coming back.
Well, right now he's being courted by the Rangers, Yankees, Astros, and the Sox. Well,
I know.
We'll wait to see what he decides.
And how many players can you say in their career could go home, take a vacation, and still have 4 teams knocking on their door saying, so anytime you're ready,
so much for retirement.
We've got a place for you.
Now, with a list of just 50 games, of course you have to leave some off.
Yes.
Is there a game that you wish had made the list?
You know, the game I really wish we had put in was there was a matchup between a Red Sox pitcher named Smokey Joe Wood and Walter Johnson, who's one of the famous, you know, Hall of Fame pitchers of all time, that at its time was considered probably like the most hyped up, biggest matchup of its year, if not its decade. And that was one that we probably should have looked at more seriously. But, you know, there's a lot of Smokey Joe Wood in the book already. So, you know, he pitched a no-hitter. That's in the book. He pitched a bunch of their important World Series wins, things like that. So, you know, ultimately, Walter Johnson didn't make it. But, you know, if I did it again, I'd probably think harder about putting that one in.
Well, among other things, you write, I think, science fiction and erotica.
That's right.
You might be the only writer to ever be published in both Penthouse and Ms. Magazine.
That's right.
Do you see any connection between writing erotica and writing about baseball?
You know, not in a very overt sense. I think it's I write about what I'm passionate about, and baseball is just one of those things that grabbed hold of me when I was, you know, 10 years old and has never let go. And it's just one of those things that, I don't know, you in the course of a baseball season, you have all of the emotions that you can have over the course of a love affair, you know, from the first flush of that, you know, what is it going to be like, you know, right to the, oh, my God, I can't believe it's over.
Not to mention the long-standing masochistic relationship that fans have had with the Red Sox.
Yes, definitely. And that's definitely one of the things that drew me to the Red Sox when I moved to New England. I mean, you can't escape them. You can't ignore them. You know, they're so compelling and they're so they're so much a fabric of living here that I couldn't help but fall in love with the Red Sox once I was here.
Well, Celia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And go Sox.
Yeah.
Celia Tan and Bill Nolan co-wrote the book, The 50 Greatest Red Sox Games. Celia is also the author of The 50 Greatest Yankees Games. And when she's not writing about erotic fantasies or baseball, Cecilia plays women's baseball, practices taekwondo, and directs media relations for the New England Leather Alliance. This is The Front Porch on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Shay Zeller. Before we get too far into baseball season, we wanted to stop for a second and take a look back at spring training. This is where players get to shake off the dust a little before the regular season, and newer players jockey for a position on the opening day roster. Back in 2004, Adam Hizdew traveled to Florida for spring training with the Boston Red Sox. He took a tape recorder along with him to keep an audio diary of his experience.
Holy Toledo, the struggles continue. Maybe the most disappointing day of the spring. Second at bat, two guys on, we're down two runs. We've kind of rallied in the ninth, and I strike out to end the game. Just a very discouraging thing to have happen. You know, you just kind of like, uncle, what gives? You give everything you've got all of the time, but yet these things happen sometimes. You just roll with them. Can't dwell on it. It's an everyday thing. It's an everyday grind. It's a constant adjustment. It's the people that make the adjustments quicker that have more success. And, you know, occasionally there's guys that just have it. I'm one of the guys that needs to work at it.
This is Alexa speaking. I'm here with my daddy, although my friends are in Arizona. But that's all right because I'm here with my daddy.
I get to the park. Julie's dropping me off today. And no bus. This is not good. I was running late to begin with for what I thought was an 8 o'clock bus, only to find out that the bus left at 7:30. Sweet. This is great. So now my family, in pajamas, three children and a wife, have to drive me to Winter Haven, Florida, which is a solid 2 hours. So good start to the day. And I got to go there and have a real bad at-bat, too. So just a kicker. D-Day in Jupiter, Florida. Just finished my round of batting practice. And Terry calls me over and says, Adam, can I talk to you? Never really a good thing this time of year. He says, as of right now, we don't have you slated as making our club. It's... the emotion's always disappointing. somehow it's easier this time, I think, because my spring went not as well as I'd liked. You know, any kind of doubt or uncertainty that creeps into your mind is never good. And I had some of that. I guess it all stems from not feeling good about, you know, your swing, and so that parlays into bad thinking. And bad thinking is a bad thing.
The seasons he spent in the minor leagues, he's played almost 1,400 minor league games.
You got to love the game, your wife's got to love the game, and your kids have got to love the game.
And they both better love you to put up with it.
Yeah, and you better have a good call.
This year everybody's older. My dad's 32. I'm 7. My big brother's 10. My little brother's 3. It ends up that everything's all right.
How upset can I ever get? I mean, what can happen to me on this earth that I haven't been through? I've held my own dead son in my hands. And so for someone to look at me and say, well, gee, he should be more upset, or how does he deal with the disappointments? Well, it's all relative. How big a disappointment is it to find out you're going to AAA in regards to the type of emotions you feel when you find out that your firstborn son just passed away? I mean, what are you going to do? I'm going to get beat up over the baseball? I mean, seriously. Where we hung up, you know what I mean? So you want to deal with emotion, deal with that. And so as the spring training ends, so too another year of spring training ends, and they mount up quick. And the only thing consistent about all those years is the fact that as of right now, every one of them will have been started in the minor leagues. Holy cow. I mean, seriously. But it is what it is. And you understand that there's a greater good.
That's baseball player Adam Hizdew, recorded in 2004 when he was part of the Red Sox franchise. This year he's playing for the Oklahoma Redhawks, a farm team for the Texas Rangers. That piece comes to us by way of the Public Radio Exchange. You can listen to Adam's entire series there and comment on it. There's a link to PRX at the Front Porch section of nhpr.org. This is the Front Porch on New Hampshire Public Radio.